Thank you for joining the Buckeye Justice League, where we fight to keep sacred the spirit and principles of the Seventh Amendment for Ohio victims. My name is Jeremy Burnside. I am not a podcast professional. Like you, I'm a trial attorney, and I sometimes feel that I'm fighting a losing battle. Also like you, I fight for a change in the Buckeye State civil justice system. I'm proud to call myself a trial attorney and proud to host this podcast. It is my intent to keep you up to speed with some of the latest issues we face in our practice, which issues directly affect our clients. It is also my intent to keep you motivated about the good work that you do in the face of significant resistance. Every once in a while, it's nice to hear stories from others to remind ourselves that we are not fighting this battle alone. Hi, on today's show, we're here with Nancy Eiler. Nancy, are you there?
I am, Jeremy.
Okay. Nancy, today we're going to be talking about mandatory arbitration agreements. And I have a bunch of questions about those, but first of all, let me just... If you could just tell the audience a little bit about your experience with the types of cases that you're seeing these types of agreements.
Sure, Jeremy. What I'm seeing is actually interesting both on a national level and both in a statewide level also. I mean, mandatory arbitration agreements are certainly the latest wave of tort reform sweeping the country. We have seen it, like I said, throughout the country, in certainly now in Ohio. I have seen them mostly in commercial contracts. Certainly, a good portion of my practice is nursing home negligence cases, and I'm seeing a lot of arbitration agreements with those kinds of cases.
And when you see these arbitration agreements, where are they? When does your client sign them? How does that process get initiated between your client and the company?
Well, what happens, certainly I have an inquiry about a possible case. I'll get the records from the nursing home, and oftentimes the arbitration, if there's an arbitration clause or arbitration agreement, it is not in the initial offering of records. It has to be specifically asked for. It's in the business portion of the resident's file. But oftentimes once a case is filed, there will be a motion initiated by the defense, a motion to dismiss and compel arbitration, and a motion to stay the case. So that's how I'm seeing those clauses coming up in my practice.
Nancy, going back to when, let's just talk about in a nursing home context, how does a patient or a resident, who do they meet with when they sign these things? What types of, is it an informal meeting? What's the circumstances that surround the actual signing of these arbitration agreements? Is it discussed? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, this is what happens. When a resident is admitted to a nursing home, part of their admission package oftentimes will include a arbitration clause. It will be a clause or a standalone agreement within the admission package. Oftentimes, the resident or the family member will, at the time of admission, will be asked to come to the admission office, and they'll be asked to sign a bunch of forms. I mean, as many as 20 forms at a time. Included in there will be an arbitration clause. Now, sometimes it is in the admission agreement, and it is just a paragraph or a sentence, or sometimes it is a standalone document itself. So that's what I am seeing.
And what if the resident isn't competent? Is there a family member or somebody with whom the resident has a power of attorney with who can sign that arbitration agreement?
Well, certainly, you know, it's usually what I'm seeing, Jeremy, is certainly after the fact. You know, certainly I would counsel anybody not to sign an arbitration agreement. That it's certainly not, you know, there's a reason why the nursing home industry wants these arbitration agreements. Certainly they feel like they do much better before a panel than they would do before, a jury. And certainly we as lawyers, you know, want to preserve our client's right to a jury trial. So, you know, I tell people never to sign an arbitration agreement. But oftentimes, if the resident signs it or if the resident is not competent because they are of diminished capacity due to medications or condition, sometimes a family member has a power of attorney and is asked to sign. It's important to distinguish between a power of attorney for healthcare decisions and a legal power of attorney. So, but I, once again, I see these arbitration agreements after the fact.
And when you say after the fact, you mentioned that typically when you file a nursing home complaint, the defense will file a motion. Now, is this a motion that is filed after an answer is filed, or is this something that's typically filed with the court after an answer is filed?
Usually after the answer is filed, shortly thereafter, the defendants will file, once again, a motion to dismiss the complaint and compel arbitration and enforcement of the arbitration agreement, and also a motion to stay the case pending that determination.
So, Nancy, where are these arbitration forums, where are they? Are they clear across the country?
Oh, well, I think you're seeing them all over. They have been all over the country. They've been part of packages, you know, the admission packages for nursing home residents.
And in these actual do we know how many arbiters there are? Do we know what the rules are? Is this something where it's a private arbitration company who's hearing these things? What's the danger of getting stuck with a ruling from a trial court for mandatory arbitration?
Oftentimes, the arbitration agreement itself will set forth the entity that will conduct the arbitration. And oftentimes, the nursing home itself, the nursing home corporation, will pick the arbiter. So obviously, that is not a situation that would be conducive to a fair and hearing of a client's case. So once again, as I started off with, this is a wave of tort reform looking to deny people their right to a jury trial. Arbitration is never good for the plaintiff. It's when a case is submitted to arbitration, there's limits on discovery. There is no subpoena power. The nursing home corporations try to argue that somehow it's cost saving, but you know that's not true at all. The arbitrators need to be paid. Plaintiffs still need to present expert testimony. So in fact, it's not a savings at all.
Who pays the arbitration panel? Would it be safe to say that it would be the nursing home?
Well, it depends. It can depend on. It can vary from agreement to agreement. But once again, this is arbitration agreements are something that we should fight tooth and nail to challenge them as unenforceable. And then if they are enforceable, let's talk about how best to attack these.
Yeah, how do we oppose these? And when do we oppose these?
Well, like I said, usually it's in response to the defendant's motion to dismiss and compel arbitration. But I think once you receive that, the first thing you want to do is you want to ask the court for time in which to conduct discovery. You need to secure and develop a strong factual record, or else it's going to be very difficult to have that support in which to argue that the arbitration clause is unenforceable. There's once an Ohio Supreme Court case on nursing home arbitration agreements. It's Hayes versus Oak Ridge Home. And unfortunately, in that particular case, there was not a developed factual record. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court found that arbitration agreement was enforceable. So it's important to take the time to petition the court for time in which to conduct discovery.
And that'd be similar to something like you would do for a premature motion for summary judgment.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, when talking about conducting discovery to set up your record for the court to consider all the facts, whose deposition do you want to take?
You absolutely want to take everybody who was involved with the signing of the document. So certainly you want to take the deposition of the admission officer or the person who acted on behalf of the nursing home. That person should have signed the arbitration agreement. So you want to take their deposition. You certainly want to understand what their training was by the corporation. What did she tell the resident or their family? Did she explain each and every document? Did she explain the terms? And then certainly did she or he know the difference between an arbitration and a trial by jury? And did they convey that? What do they convey to the resident or the resident's family about that issue?
And Nancy, what if it's a wrongful death case? What do you do in that situation?
Well, you know what, Jeremy, if I think that will, if we can hold off that question for just a few minutes until
sure.
we discuss, I think once, if I can just finish up about who you want to depose, and then I think we should talk about how best to attack the arbitration agreement, and in that I will discuss specifically the wrongful death action.
Okay, very good.
So you want to take the admission officer, certainly, and also the resident or the person who signed the agreement, if they in fact signed it. You want to know certainly what I've done in some of my cases is I've had my client and I prepared for them a detailed affidavit about everything that they experienced and their understanding of the signing of the admission agreement and what was explained to them with the arbitration agreement. So oftentimes I will submit a very detailed affidavit on behalf of my client in support of the opposition to enforce the arbitration agreement. And then certainly if there's anybody else in the room at the time these documents were signed, you want to take their deposition also.
Okay. What about what types of documents do you request? Do you request any corporate documents about certain policies on how they explain these agreements to the residents?
Exactly. That's what you would ask for, certainly, and all the documents that were presented at the time of the signing.
Okay. Okay. Is there anything else that you think would help our audience in ascertaining what the best type of strategy is before you actually respond to their motion? Is there, outside of discovery, is there a certain types of conversations you would have with your clients, with your clients' family members? What other types of information are helpful that you wouldn't necessarily get from the opposing party, but you would get from your own client?
Well, you know, Jeremy, if I can answer that in a way that I think it's important to understand what your strategy is in line of attack as far as when you're presented with this kind of, assuming you're presented with an arbitration agreement that was signed. I think you really want to step back and, first of all, keep it simple. I mean, this is a contract. So you want to go back to, you know, put your head on from law school and begin to analyze the four corners of the document. Is this a valid contract? You know, there is case law in Ohio and certainly throughout the country that talks about the fact that courts do support and favor arbitration, but only if there is a valid arbitration agreement. Courts have been very emphatic in holding that arbitration is a matter of consent, not coercion. So you want to make sure that you go through the elements of a contract. Was there an offer? Was there acceptance? Was there a meeting of the minds? Did the resident or the resident's family understand what an arbitration clause was, that they would be giving up their right to a jury trial, that they would be giving up their right to depose witnesses and subpoena witnesses? Did they understand that? And then was there exchange of consideration? You know, did the nursing home charge a different charge for those people who had accepted the arbitration clause and people that rejected the arbitration clause? So once again, you want to be mindful of those elements of a contract. And then...
And Nancy, and you might be getting to it, but like residents with dementia,
mm-hmm.
is this something where you would also go out and get some medical bills, medical records, and maybe even a expert report just explaining about the perils of dementia and how that may have impacted the resident's ability to form this contract?
Absolutely. You want to look at who signed the contract. You know, if it was the resident, did the resident get admitted to the nursing home with a diagnosis of dementia? You know, does the nursing home record contain notations of confusion and those kinds of things? You know, was the resident competent to sign? You know, were they medicated at the time? You know, when was the contract signed? Was it, you know, was it in the middle of the night when the resident arrived at the nursing home? So, yes, all those things you want to look at, and a lot of that may be right in the nursing home record itself. And as silly as it sounds, was the contract signed? I mean, I've seen arbitration agreements that are not signed by anybody on behalf of the resident.
Yeah, I have as well. And then with the nursing home, they come back and they'll say something like, oh, well, we've just provided you a copy of the form, but we have the signed agreement, but we're still trying to find it. Typical argument. But, Nancy, let's just say you've gotten everything you needed. If you needed medical records, you have those. You've taken your depositions. You have all the nursing home records and policies. How do you formulate your motion or your brief in opposition to this motion?
Well, like I said, what I do is first I have to understand once again, this is a very fact-intensive response. So you want to make sure that you understand the roadmap before you get in the car. So once again, and back to the proper parties, you want to make sure that that who actually signed on behalf of the nursing home. Only the parties to the agreement are bound by the agreement. For those of us who do a lot of nursing home cases, you know, we all know that there's lots of different corporations involved with the running of a nursing home. Which corporation signed the whose behalf was the arbitration agreement signed upon? And then going back to your initial question about wrongful death, I mean, the law is clear in Ohio that a resident who signs an arbitration agreement does not bind their heirs for a wrongful death claim. That's the case of Peterson versus Columbus Steel. So you want to make sure that you understand who signed the agreement, because they will be bound by it. And then, you know, as simple as looking at the terms of the agreement. I have seen arbitration agreements that have had open-ended termination clauses, meaning you can terminate at any time. Well, why don't you send a letter saying we're terminating right now? I mean, the arbitration agreement contract is designed and drafted by the nursing home, and they have to live with those specific terms. And so, Jeremy, once you have determined whether you, in fact, have a valid contract, it's not over then. Then you look to see whether the issue becomes unconscionability. Is it procedural or substantively unconscionable? In Ohio, you have to have both of those. And substantive unconscionability talks about whether the terms of the contract, were they fair to both sides, or do they apply equally to both sides? In one particular case, the nursing home reserved the right to itself to sue the resident for unpaid bills, but then took away the resident's right to sue them. I mean, that's obviously not equitable. And then, is the arbitration agreement a separate standalone agreement, or is it incorporated, kind of hidden in the admission agreement? I mean, courts do not look fondly upon arbitration clauses or just sentences that are buried in an arbitration agreement. So those are all things you need to look at when and be mindful of before you start your discovery.
Okay. And then when you're formulating your motion, is there a particular case? I know you mentioned a couple cases.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular case that you rely upon in basically stating that these clauses violate the Seventh Amendment? Where does the Seventh Amendment play into all this?
Well, you know, I think it all goes back to contract. You know, did the resident or the resident's family understand that what they were giving up? You know, the important and very serious right to a jury trial, did they understand that? And to answer your question, Jeremy, there's not one particular case. That's what's challenging about these agreements, is you really have to do a thorough legal research to see, because each case has kind of added a little bit, and you kind of have to take a compilation of all of that when forming your strategy and how to attack these clauses.
See, how does procedural unconscionability play into all of this?
Well, Jeremy, once again, once you've done an analysis and perhaps there is a valid contract, once again, that's where the unconscionability then comes to play. There's two kinds, both substantive and procedural unconscionability. We've talked about substantive, which goes to the terms of the contract, and procedural unconscionability talks about the execution of the agreement. For instance, as we talked about before, was the resident presented a stack of documents. And a case that I had, I mean, the daughter was presented 19 separate documents that she was asked to sign. Courts do not look fondly upon admission arbitration clauses that are required for the admission to the facility. They don't like those at all. You want to look at the courts will look to the age, education, business experience, or contract experience of the person signing. They want to see whether the two sides, the nursing home representative, the nursing home corporation, is balanced with the person signing. And then also look to whether the resident was given time to consult with an attorney or were the terms explained to them. All these things go into courts look to when determining whether a contract is unconscionable.
Okay. And then let's just say, Nancy, is there anything else that you think our audience members need to know about what should go into their response?
Well, I do. I think there's been some recent U.S. Supreme Court cases on arbitration agreements. One particular, the Marmot case, was a specific nursing home arbitration agreement. And the defense is, you know, waving that around, saying that's the end all and be all issue over. It is not. It's a very interesting case, and all it really says is that states cannot, as a matter of blanket public policy, say that we do not like arbitration agreements, so we're not going to enforce them. All the contract elements that we discussed still come into play. So just make sure that you don't buy into the defense argument that these cases are dispositive of the issue of arbitration agreements.
Okay. Nancy, is there anything else that you think our audience members need to know about these types of arbitration agreements in general?
No, I think it's always important, Jeremy, to sit with your client and to try to recreate that time so you can best understand what kind of stresses or concerns they were having at the time of they were signing these documents. Oftentimes, they are very concerned about their family member or about themselves. They've just, most of the time, come from a hospital discharge, going right to a nursing home. It's very unfamiliar. They're very overwhelmed. Once again, they may be medicated. They may have physical conditions that or mental conditions that limit their ability. So I think it's important to really sit discuss in detail with your client about the circumstances surrounding the signing of these documents and what they understood and what they were told.
Okay, very good. Nancy Eiler discussing mandatory arbitration agreements in a nursing home context. Nancy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. It was my pleasure.
This podcast contains the opinions of myself, my guests, and the opinions here do not necessarily reflect those of our sponsors or their supporters. The content shared on this podcast is intended to be a guide, not a substitute of your own due diligence. After all, our opinions on this show can always be wrong. As such, it is incumbent upon you to read the cases and statutes, check their statuses, and obviously consult with the ethics rules and opinions before relying on anything you hear on the Buckeye Justice League.